The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Derek Frost from North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties, with its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina. Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Rooftops Retail. Booming towns and counties seek to land businesses to balance their tax bases. And the story begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, Home Surge Creates Tax Base Scramble. Regional communities look to balance the growth of homes by luring businesses as well. And this is written by Ben Tobin. Johnston County has added roughly 90,000 residents over the past 15 years, transforming farmland into subdivisions and rural crossroads into shopping centers. But for one of North Carolina's fastest-growing communities, a recent cost of services study suggests that growth comes with a challenge. For every $1 Johnston County receives from residential development, it spends roughly $1.43 providing services, according to findings presented to county commissioners in June. These numbers crystallize a quandary that many of North Carolina's boom towns can no longer ignore. As thousands of new homes rise across counties like Johnston and Chatham, local leaders are racing to attract the commercial and industrial tax base needed to keep pace with growth and help fund the roads, public safety, parks, and other services that growth requires. The issue is particularly acute in communities surrounding Raleigh, where rapid population growth and soaring housing demand have transformed once rural towns into booming suburban centers. While new neighborhoods expand the property tax base, residential development typically costs local governments more in services than it generates in tax revenue. Commercial and industrial development, by contrast, generally produces more revenue relative to the cost of serving it. New residents create the customer base that attracts retailers, restaurants, and employers, but they also increase demand for schools, parks, police officers, firefighters, water and sewer infrastructure, roads, and other public services. Local officials aren't arguing against new homes. In fact, many say housing is critical to attracting employers, retailers, and investment. The challenge, they say, is ensuring job growth and commercial investment keep pace with the rooftops. Johnston County Commissioner spent more than 45 minutes probing this issue during a June 15 board meeting, a discussion that is likely to continue as growth reshapes the county. Even Commissioner April Stevens, who owns a local real estate firm, emphasized the importance of other real estate growing along with homes. "This is what keeps us up at night," Stevens said during the meeting. "What we do all day, every day, is try to figure out what the balance of this looks like." Johnston County isn't alone. Across the Triangle's fastest-growing communities, local leaders are increasingly asking the same question. Can commercial and industrial growth keep pace with the thousands of new rooftops appearing every year? The result is a growing focus on a metric that can determine whether a community's growth remains financially sustainable, the balance between residential and non-residential property in its tax base. More residential, more costs. There's an old adage in real estate that retail follows rooftops. Developers have long understood that population growth eventually attracts shopping centers, restaurants, and employers. The more residents a community has, the more businesses it can support. The challenge for local governments is timing. In many fast-growing communities, homes are being built faster than the commercial and industrial development needed to support them. The subdivision and rooftops sprout up at a much more rapid clip than the commercial and industrial developments that are needed to pay the freight, said Jonathan Morgan, a professor at the UNC School of Government. Residential development tends to not generate a sufficient amount of tax revenue to pay for the cost of local government services that residential development demands, Morgan said. For bedroom communities, their tax base can get out of whack because they're so heavily skewed residential that they don't have the commercial and industrial tax base to offset the cost. One reason is that residential and commercial properties place different demands on public infrastructure. A big box retailer may generate substantial tax revenue while placing relatively modest demands on water, sewer, and other local services. A subdivision, by contrast, can bring hundreds of new households that require additional capacity across multiple systems. Scott Mooneyham, a communications consultant for the North Carolina League of Municipalities, pointed to a simple example. While a big box store may only have 8 toilets, a neighborhood will likely have hundreds, placing greater demand on water and sewer capacity. It's difficult for purely residential development to pay the bills, Mooneyham said. When you're a user of the services, you don't always think about using it, he added. When you drive down your streets, you don't think about the cost. When you have fire protection and how that affects your homeowner's insurance rates, you don't think about those things, but they are all part of what's going on in the background of that government service mix and how they're financed. Growth will only continue for the Triangle and North Carolina as a whole. The state's current population of 11.2 million is expected to add around 2.5 million additional residents over the next 25 years, according to estimates from the North Carolina State Demographer's Office. That growth poses challenges for the tax-based balance, according to policy experts. Those communities that have 90% of their tax base as residential do not have a long-term sustainable revenue stream for the public services that they are offering citizens. Crystal Morfis, founder and CEO of Creative Economic Development Consulting, said during the Johnston County Board of Commissioners meeting on June 15, "That's why you need the mix of residential and commercial and agricultural." Commissioner Bill Stovall replied, "What is the appropriate balance to ensure we preferably have net positive revenue?" The answer varies from community to community, but across the triangle, many local leaders have begun pursuing the same goal, to increase the share of commercial and employment-generating development within their tax base. Solutions to tax base balance. If any triangle community illustrates the opportunities and challenges that come with rapid growth, it may be Clayton. Once a small Johnston County town, Clayton has emerged as one of the region's fastest-growing communities, more than doubling its population from 2010 to today. "We're sitting here basically putting 500-plus homes a year down on the ground," Clayton town manager Rich Coppola said. "A family of 5 like mine moves into town every single day. That's a great opportunity, but it comes with its challenges." As a result of myriad home construction, Clayton's tax base skews heavily residential, roughly 80% residential to 20% non-residential, according to Coppola. He said his goal is to get closer to a 70-30 breakdown. "We want to build ourselves into the full-service economic center so that we can support everything right here in Clayton," Coppola said. Communities across the triangle, like Pittsboro, are pursuing similar goals. The Chatham County town is at the center of one of North Carolina's largest master planned communities, Chatham Park, a development expected to eventually include thousands of homes and a plethora of commercial space. Despite the residential growth underway, Pittsboro town manager Jonathan Franklin said the town is focused on avoiding a future where housing outpaces job creation and commercial investment. "As Pittsboro grows, we're being very intentional about not becoming just a bedroom community," Franklin said. Pittsboro's tax base is currently about 67% residential and 33% non-residential, according to Franklin. While he said there is no perfect ratio, he would like to see the town move closer to a 60-40 split over time. "The goal is not simply to hit a number," Franklin said. "The goal is to create a more fiscally balanced community where the tax base can support public safety, infrastructure, parks, public facilities, and municipal services without placing too much of that burden on residential taxpayers." To accomplish that, Pittsboro is pursuing a mix of strategies, including mixed-use planning, downtown redevelopment, and support for small businesses. Franklin said the town's objective is to ensure commercial and employment-generating uses grow alongside residential development rather than lag behind it. "The broader lesson is that growth should be planned and evaluated in a way that supports both quality of life and fiscal sustainability," he said. Holly Springs, for many local officials, represents one of the clearest examples of what a balanced growth strategy can look like, as it has steadily added investments. Holly Springs officials said the town's ratio is 70-30 residential to non-residential, with the goal of getting that to a 60-40 in the coming years. With billions of dollars of investments from Genentech, Amgen, and Fujifilm Biotechnologies, Holly Springs has emerged as a biotech hub. The more balanced our tax base is, the less we are relying upon residential taxes, Mayor Mike Kondratik said. And so that allows us to be able to plan for and expand existing services and add new services without having to go back and raise residential tax rates. Balancing those budgets with needs of citizens is always a challenge, regardless of the amount. Budget amounts vary greatly by municipality and county, depending on size and if they have to manage water, sewer, and electric funds. Pittsboro, a town of around 5,000, recently adopted a budget that totals $13.9 million for the 2026-27 fiscal year. The budgets for Clayton and Holly Springs sit at around $140 million each. Johnston County's budget is roughly $435 million. Why new housing still matters. For all the concerns surrounding residential growth, local officials say that new housing remains essential to economic development. It's really important to recognize that it is a balance and one doesn't come without the other, Patrick Harris, chairman of the Johnston County Board of Commissioners, said during the June 15 meeting. We're getting the Targets and the BJs and all these things now because we have enough people to support those things. There was a time that they would not come to this area because you didn't have enough people to shop there. Local leaders say that reality explains why communities are unlikely to abandon residential growth while seeking commercial development. New residents provide the workforce employers need, the customers retailers seek, and the demand that supports additional investment. The challenge is not whether to grow, but how. The wave is coming, Coppola said. You can either ride it or you can get run over by it. And also TBJ reporter Zach Ezone contributed to this story. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by Dane Huffman. Marines honored at new NC Museum. Carolina Museum of the Marine is now open in Jacksonville. Jack Lucas of the small North Carolina town of Plymouth was 14 years old when he enrolled in the Marines in 1942. Lying about his age, he landed in the Pacific and determined to join the fight, stowed away on a ship bound for Iwo Jima. On the island, Lucas and fellow Marines battled a Japanese machine gun nest when two grenades landed in their foxhole. Lucas jumped on one, grabbed the other, and pulled it under him. In the explosion that followed, Lucas was assumed dead but survived. He was at the White House in October 1945 to receive the Medal of Honor, the youngest winner ever. Lucas and others are celebrated at a new museum in Jacksonville called the Carolina Museum of the Marine. The museum highlights Marines and sailors from across North and South Carolina and just opened this summer. The 25,000-foot museum highlights the stories of 43 individuals and has exhibits dating to World War II. The lessons we learn here about leadership, courage, sacrifice, overcoming adversity, problem solving, and more inspire each of us to make life better right now, said retired Marine Major General Joe Schrader, the president and CEO of the museum. For example, the museum tells the story of Lieutenant General John A. Lejeune, for whom the Jacksonville base was named. Lejeune was the Marine Commandant from 1920 to 1929, and he modernized the Corps with an emphasis on training for the amphibious assaults that would become so vital in World War II. The museum is designed to give visitors a sense of what the Marines experienced with an LVT-4 landing craft from World War II and a Huey helicopter from the Vietnam War. The museum is open Tuesday through Sunday. RTP's path to mixed use now clear after votes. The last hurdles to allowing mixed-use development within Research Triangle Park have been cleared and applications for new development open soon. On June 29, the Research Triangle Foundation of North Carolina Board of Directors approved the new code and regulations. That came after the RTP Owners and Tenants Association also voted to approve the new code. Travis Clayton, Vice President of Planning and Public Policy for RTF, said the development application process will open on July 16 with an information session in August for interested landowners. Hey, look, Dad took my picture. Mehmet Demirci, the talented photographer for Triangle Business Journal, has a creative book out called Daddy Take a Picture that highlights the curiosity of his two children. Demirci used his phone and the Hipstamatic app for the book, which adds a vintage feel. The book includes shots from his home country of Turkey. Of course, it also includes lively photos of his children. It became an incredibly educational experience for me seeing the world through the eyes of a child, he wrote. The book sells for $40 on Demirci's website. NC State, UNC project get nods. A push to build a new nuclear reactor at NC State University and an expansion of UNC Chapel Hill at Carolina North are among the projects to receive support if lawmakers approve the budget proposal. The legislation, which still requires approval from the General Assembly, also directs an additional $208 million for a proposed children's hospital in Apex, led by a joint venture of UNC Health and Duke Health. The budget proposal follows lawmakers in May announcing an agreed framework for a long-delayed state budget. Hatteras makes exit with sale. Bayer has acquired Perfuse Therapeutics, a small biotechnology company with operations in Research Triangle Park and backing from local investors, for up to $2.45 billion. Last month, Bayer closed its acquisition of Perfuse, that's spelled P-E-R-F-U-S-E, paying $300 million up front and agreeing to pay potentially billions more in future milestone payments. The transaction provides an exit for Durham-based Hatteras Venture Partners. Hatteras participated in Perfuse's seed round in 2019 alongside Orbi Med and other investors. And finally, Grandover plays World Cup role. Leaders of the Grandover Resort and Spa in Greensboro say signing up to serve as a FIFA World Cup base camp was a big risk, but hosting the Norwegian national football team turned into a big victory for the hotel and the city. Christina York, director of sales and marketing at Grandover, said FIFA reached out to the hotel in 2024. The process was really interesting and pretty unusual for us, York told the Triad Business Journal. I'm really glad we decided to take the risk because it turned out better for us than we ever could have imagined. And now we turn to the top news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. The first one written by Kaylee Thompson. Building inside Beltline sells for above value. In a soft market, Raleigh office building sells for nearly $27 million. A Raleigh office building just inside the Beltline has been sold again and for above its assessed value. Schmier and Fearing Properties of Florida paid $26.75 million for the Pinnacle Bank-anchored office building along Glenwood Avenue, per Wake County deed records. The office property sold for $24.31 million in 2023 to an LLC addressed to CGN Global of Chicago. The price comes out to $356 per square foot. Office building sales have been slow in 2026, and most have fetched lower prices, like a pair of Cary office buildings that sold for $10.3 million and an office building near Research Triangle Park that sold for $45.5 million, millions below its assessed value despite being nearly fully leased. At the start of the year, a Northeast Raleigh 10-story office building went for $20.5 million, also millions below its assessed value. But the Glenwood Avenue building does have the advantage of being in close proximity to the Beltline and to key corridors such as Oberlin Road. Five Points, for example, is a short drive away. Pinnacle Bank owned the property from 2017 until 2023 when it sold the building in a sale leaseback. Pinnacle leased the entire building back from the new owners for a lease term of 14.5 years. There are 11.5 years left on that lease. Schmier and Fearing Properties and Pinnacle Bank did not respond to a request for comment. The Class A office building is 66% leased. Triangle Business Journal had previously been in the building but recently relocated to the Time and Temperature building adjacent to the Crabtree Valley Mall. Other tenants in the 75,000 square foot office include Raymond James and Sterling Pillar. York Properties is handling the leasing for the building. The building was built in 2016 and is assessed at $14.9 million. It sits on 4.2 acres at 3515 Glenwood Avenue. And our next story is written by Lauren Onasorge. Godmother of plant science field dies at 87. Chilton channeled a passion for science into groundbreaking life. No one told Mary Dell Chilton, often credited as the inventor of modern plant science, what to do. Chilton, called by some the founder of agrobiotechnology, worked for more than three decades at Syngenta. She died recently at age 87 at her home in Carrboro, according to a post by her son, Mark Chilton. Chilton, who answered to Mary Dell, never Mary, grew up with her grandparents in Southern Pines, developing an early interest in astronomy. By high school in Chicago, she went from reading about astronomy to building an actual telescope, grinding her own mirror while other kids were at football and cheerleading practice. The shift to chemistry in college came down to a snarky astronomy professor who thought she'd need more calculus to understand his class. "I decided to hell with it," she would later say of the astronomy track. "They didn't want me and I didn't want them." So she turned to chemistry, igniting a lifelong passion despite the fact that men kept outnumbering women in her laboratories. Gender stereotypes never held her back. "Nope, never thought about it," she said when asked about it in 2015. Chilton would go on to help develop the first transgenic plant in the early 1980s. Her team demonstrated that plant genomes could be altered. The discovery brought her into the global spotlight, a photograph in Time magazine, international acclaim, and a big job offer. The predecessor of Swiss firm Syngenta recruited Chilton from Washington University in St. Louis in 1983, appointing her executive director of the new RTP site. Chilton was always most comfortable in a lab. She led Syngenta's RTP site for a decade before stepping away from administrative duties in 1993 to return to research. "It's Christmas morning anytime I look at the results to see what happened," Chilton told TBJ in 2010. Triangle AI firm raises $95 million, ramps up hiring. A Durham-based artificial intelligence company targeting the home building industry has raised $95 million and is hiring. The round brings HiArc's total funding to more than $170 million, according to the company. It's the kind of money that has outsiders asking about valuations and exits, but HiArc CEO Mark Miner declined to provide specifics on valuation and would not say whether HiArc has reached the coveted unicorn status with the latest raise. "The key is really to focus on the mission and the results and not on valuations, he said. But he did say that going public someday is the most likely outcome. "Our focus right now is really on scaling, not necessarily on speed to an exit," he said. "Homes are basically locked away in drawings, he said. "There's no good data. Technology has locked out of home building in a lot of ways because there's no good data," he says. The remote first firm, which had 70 employees 2 years ago, now has 215 employees. It has 14 employees in North Carolina, including 9 in the Triangle. And that was actually written by Lauren Onasurge. In Fenton, Wegmans sued over unpaid carry rent. This is written by Kate Tracy. New York grocer Wegmans is being sued for more than $300,000 in unpaid rent at Carey's Fenton development, despite never building a store. An LLC listing the address of real estate firm Hines, developer and manager of Fenton, filed a complaint against Wegmans on May 26 over alleged non-payment of rent. The case was originally filed in Wake County but was transferred to the Eastern District of North Carolina last week. According to the complaint, Wegmans executed a lease agreement in 2016 for the Fenton site, but rent payments did not commence until March 23, 2022. The initial lease term was for 20 years, with options to extend after that, the complaint says. In 2021, Wegmans decided not to build a grocery store at Fenton. "The rise of online shopping over the past 5 years has enabled us to serve customers in a much greater radius than we originally projected when we announced the Fenton location nearly a decade ago," a Wegmans spokesperson said in an email last fall. Wegmans' monthly rent at Fenton is $125,000, according to the complaint. In February, Wegmans notified the Fenton owners that it was going to stop paying rent in March and intended to terminate the lease and surrender possession of the site. Wegmans currently owes $333,202 in rent plus interest, according to the complaint, and owes rent for both April and May. "The lease between landlord and tenant remains valid, binding, and in full force and effect," the complaint says. Hines developed Fenton along with Columbia Development and Affinius Capital. Hines did not provide comment on the case. Wegmans did not return a request for comment. And finally, we have a story by Kate Tracy. Historic farm to get new life in fast-growing Wendell. Property to be restored. Target restaurants, breweries. Parminder Sandhar is gearing up to rehabilitate a historic Wendell farm and bring a handful of retailers to the property. Located at 401 Cotton Gin Road off Eagle Rock Road, the Hood Anderson Farm is listed on the National Register of Historic Places and owned by Capital Area Preservation. Sandhar intends to close on the 9-acre property next week for $375,000, with plans to return the farm community to the gathering place it once was. With the property flanked by new residential subdivisions, Sandhar plans to bring in businesses like restaurants, breweries, ice cream shops, beauty salons, or fitness studios. He's aiming to finish the project within the next 3 years. "There's so much to offer at this property," he said. Sandhar, whose real estate firm is Sandhar Real Estate in Holly Springs, began working in real estate in 2002 and is now a licensed general contractor carving out a niche for himself in historic renovation. "I have a little passion for these historic properties. I just like the architecture. You don't find it in new construction," he said. His renovation projects around the Triangle include the Waylon F. Poole House at 4740 Auburn Knightdale Road, and a house at 113 Holly Springs Road that now holds a family counseling business. Capital Area Preservation's president notified Sandhar about the Hood Anderson Farm opportunity, and he jumped on it. "I like the location," he said. "I really like the house itself and the history. That was the main reason why it attracted me." One anecdote about the farm involves the Civil War. When Union soldiers passed through the Eagle Rock area in April 1865, they looted the farm, according to the Hood family. A story has also been passed down through the family that a single Yankee straggler was caught in the upstairs southern bedroom where he was shot and killed. Supposedly, the family buried him secretly somewhere on the farm, National Park Service documents say. The property is within walking distance to more than 600 homes in the fast-growing Wendell community. Plans show that the existing horse barn, overseer's house, post office, general store, built in 1854, and house, dating back to 1839, will all be restored. The cemetery will remain, and Sandhar will build a retention pond with a foundation between the house and the cemetery. The two-room dwelling, where enslaved people once lived, has deteriorated and no longer exists. The property will come with 36 parking spaces. "There's enough land for the community to come back and the kids can enjoy running around while parents are hanging out," he said. And now we turn to the reporter pages in the Triangle Business Journal, starting with Ben Tobin's page, Greater Triangle. Mosaic grows with new tenants. Gateway to Chatham Park is adding businesses as growth in Pittsburgh surges. The Gateway to Chatham Park, one of the largest developments in the Triangle region, is adding several new businesses. Mosaic, located at Highway 501 and Russet Run Road near U.S. Highway 64 in Pittsburgh, will have six new tenants, according to Kirk Bradley, president and CEO of Lemoore Capital and developer of Mosaic. Among the six new tenants is Pecan Jack's, a regional ice cream shop that is making its North Carolina debut. "People are beginning to recognize Pittsburgh as a place that they need to focus and look at," Bradley said. "We're kind of at that point of inflection and that we've been working on for a while." The new tenants also include cell service provider Verizon, which will occupy a 1,500-square-foot space and open in the fourth quarter of this year. New View Eye Care, a vision an eye care specialist relocating to a 2,500-square-foot building set to be completed in March 2027. Flying Biscuit, the Atlanta-based breakfast and lunch spot, will open in third quarter of 2027. First Horizon Bank, which acquired a 0.85-acre lot in Mosaic for $2.65 million in April. Tavola, an Italian restaurant that will open in August. And Pecan Jack's, which offers homemade ice cream, pralines and brittles, candies, and alcohol-infused desserts. Bradley is also the developer of Northwood Landing, which is located across the street from Mosaic. Chatham Park is the major reason Pittsburgh, a town of more than 5,000 residents, is attracting more retail investments. The 8,500-acre master-planned community will have more than 25,000 residential units at full build-out. That includes Asteria, a 1,500-acre, 4,000-home site projected by Disney's residential real estate arm. Retail companies are realizing that over the next 12 to 24 months, there's a lot of new population coming here because of all the residential development, Bradley said. Major industrial project hits roadblock. A proposal for a major industrial project in one of the Triangle region's hottest towns has hit a roadblock. Following hours of discussion, the Clayton Planning Board voted 5-3 on June 22 to recommend denial of a conditional rezoning for more than 44 acres off 4333 Guy Road. The applicant, Chicago-based real estate firm Stoughton Industrial, is looking to build two spec industrial buildings totaling 376,000 square feet of space combined. The planning board only has recommendation power. It will be up to the Clayton Town Council to decide if this rezoning is approved or rejected. Ben Harris, the senior vice president of Stoughton Industrial, said during the meeting, "This design is for warehouse, distribution, and light manufacturing. It's going to be a classy development, and we believe that we can get Fortune 100, 500, and 1,000 companies in this park." Harris added that the project would not host a data center. About 10 residents who live nearby the development site spoke against the proposal. Concerns raised included potential loss of property value, traffic congestion, and water contamination. This proposal comes as Clayton, with a population of more than 33,000, is looking to diversify its tax base, which leans heavily residential. Town leaders have said that residential developments tend to cost more in services than they bring in revenue, while non-residential developments generate more revenue than cost of service. And finally, in Pitt County, former Hooters sold to Texas developer. A Texas developer that has been actively acquiring properties in the Triangle has purchased a former Hooters restaurant site in Greenville. MOC Greenville owner and LLC that lists the address of San Antonio-based Mount Oak Capital on the deed purchased the property at 316 Greenville Boulevard, southwest, south of downtown, for a little more than $1.3 million this month, according to Pitt County deed records. The 3,906-square-foot building sits on 1 acre. Hooters closed the restaurant along with two others in North Carolina in June 2024. The seller, Chicago-based LLC BL Hooters Greenville, sold the property for less than it paid for it. The LLC purchased the location in 2015 for $1.5 million, per deed records. Mount Oak Capital has made its mark in growing municipalities around the Triangle. The company developed new Outback Steakhouse and Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen locations next to each other on the 11,000 block of Clayton Boulevard, the main thoroughfare in Clayton. The former Hooters site in Greenville also sits along a busy retail corridor. Neighbors down the street include a Target, among others. Greenville has been growing at a steady pace. The city's population is around 100,000, according to census estimates. Oh, and also on this page, we have a notable number, 25. The total number of workers for a Dunkin' that opened at 2165 Pritchard Road near Clayton. It's the third in Clayton from local franchisor Coastal Franchising. And now we turn to Kate Tracy's page on retail and restaurants. They offer private suites for pups. A boutique pet hotel coming to Celebration at Six Forks in Raleigh. Forget the doghouse. Dave Atkins is opening a hotel for dogs, complete with room service and private suites. Atkins, co-founder and CEO of Nashville, Tennessee-based Yardstick, has signed a lease for a new boutique dog hotel at 7339 Six Forks Road in the Celebration at Six Forks Shopping Center. The space is approximately 8,500 square feet and was a former gym. Pending permit approvals, Yardstick plans to start construction this summer and open in first quarter 2027. "When we first studied the market, the demographics made a lot of sense for us," Atkins said of North Raleigh's concentration of affluent families. Pet ownership has surged in recent years, fueling a boom in businesses serving pet owners and their companions. The cost for overnight pet stays at Yardstick will be between $80 and $85 per night and $40 to $45 for daycare, Atkins said. Each Yardstick location employs 12 to 13 people to provide dog supervision around the clock. The Raleigh location will include 50 to 60 suites, not kennels or crates, and turf grass as well as open-air areas for play. Yardstick tries to stay true to our promise of having fewer dogs and better care, Atkins said. Room service includes puppuccinos, brain games, pupsicles, and CBD treatments, according to Yardstick's website. Atkins was attracted to the complimentary tenant mix at Celebration at Six Forks. Yardstick will be neighbors with Battle and Birdie, Wine and Design, and Dollar General, among other businesses. Charlotte-based FCA Partners owns the shopping center. "We love being in shopping centers. It's something we're doing more and more," Atkins said. Raleigh is the third city Atkins has targeted for the nationwide expansion of Yardstick, which debuted in Nashville 3.5 years ago before opening in Dallas. Raleigh will be Yardstick's 9th location once it opens. Restaurant owner buys real estate in Oakwood. Nearly a decade after opening his pizza joint in Raleigh's Oakwood community, Anthony Guerra is now his own landlord. Guerra purchased the Oakwood Pizza Box building at 610 North Person Street for $875,000 on June 17, according to Wake County Deeds. In an environment where food is probably always going to increase in cost and labor is going to increase in cost, and that only exploded after COVID, you have to control something, and the control to me was rent. That's the easiest thing, or that's the most achievable thing to control, Guerra said. Built in 1940, the Oakwood Pizza Building is 1,670 square feet. The building last sold in 2006 for $238,000 and has a total assessed value of $320,290, according to property records. The sellers were George Michael III and Donald Stevens, who operated Cybergraph Advertising Incorporated in the building prior to the Oakwood Pizza Box lease. "When I've approached them in the past about this, they've always said, Pizza Box has to be here forever. We don't need the neighborhood with pitchforks and fire to come to the doorstep about us kicking Pizza Box out of here," Guerra said. He and his brother, Brett Guerra, opened St. Pierre Wine Shop and Bar at Raleigh Ironworks in September. Science and Sip comes to Fayetteville Street. After seeing the success in other cities, Juanita Cotton is bringing science and sip experiments to Raleigh. 919 Fay Art Lab opened this summer at 319 Fayetteville Street downtown in a 3,000-square-foot space that was formerly part of the ABC 11 offices. Cotton, owner of UB Paintin' and Sippin', decided to expand from her previous location at 208 Fayetteville Street and introduce science events to Raleigh. "I feel like I'm in my dream space because it's really big, and that's what I always wanted when I first started my Paint and Sip, and here I am," she said. Cotton signed a 3-year lease for the space. At 919 Fay Art Lab, guests can choose from a variety of science experiments, including a catalyst experiment and making foam or slime. Cotton also leads trivia, games, and painting events. The venue also offers fluid bear, paint classes for $55, where guests pour acrylic paint over a bear figurine and create designs with the paint. And finally, Planet Fitness flags Wendell for a new location. Planet Fitness has picked Wendell for its next location in the Triangle. The fast-growing town east of Raleigh has received plans for a new Planet Fitness at 311 Collective Way. The 2.6-acre site is vacant and sits off Wendell Falls Parkway near the Interstate 87 interchange and WakeMed Wendell Healthplex. Plans show a 24,000-square-foot gym. The developer is Mount Oak Companies, a firm with offices in Raleigh, San Antonio, and Charleston, South Carolina. The property owner is Nash Wendell Falls LLC, which lists the address of Wendell Falls developer Newland, now part of Brookfield Properties, according to Wake County Records. The property has a total assessed value of $1.34 million. And now we turn to Lauren Onosorge's page on transportation and technology. Analysts upbeat after $13.5 billion Martin Marietta deal. Raleigh firm adds major purchase, becomes limestone leader. Immediately after announcing its $13.5 billion deal, Martin Marietta Materials shares fell on Wall Street. Martin Marietta Materials announced on June 29 that it's purchasing LHOIST North America, a move that gives it an instant leading position as a limestone supplier. Its stock ticked down, dropping by nearly 35 points to close at $581.23. However, amid concern about the deviation from MLM's sweet spot of aggregates. Analysts, however, were not concerned, seeing the move as a long-term play in a growing space. Catherine Thompson, an analyst with Thompson Research Group, told Triangle Business Journal that it's not a surprise. MLM executives at at Analyst Day last year, identified the specialty segment as an area of growth, going so far as to rename it to be more general. Previously, it had been identified as MLM's Magnesia Specialties business. This industry is pretty interesting because it has really high barriers to entry, Thompson said, noting that you have to have both geology and permitting working in your favor to mine limestone. It's also one that has higher margins and also pretty meaningfully increases free cash flow to the tune of 450 basis points, she says. It also enhances MLM's position in the data center space. Lime is a component of major industrial builds, including the data centers needed to support the rising AI demand. Thompson isn't alone. Angel Castillo of Morgan Stanley told Reuters that while the deal adds some complexity, it comes with expansion into attractive infrastructure markets, which we view as a high-quality form of diversification. Raymond James reiterated its outperform rating and $690 price target on June 29, viewing the deal as a long-term play. The deal is expected to be complete in the second half of the year. When the deal closes, the family that owns La Hoist, the Bergmans, will own 15% of MLM, according to the firm's latest proxy statement. The current largest shareholders at MLM are institutional investors. The Vanguard Group owns 11.9%, followed by BlackRock at 7%. Durham Road Project to impact businesses. A planned interchange upgrade at Garrett Road and U.S. 15501 in Durham could help the area keep up with the rising traffic volumes, but at the same time, it impacts the way customers will access businesses along the stretch, which hosts 67,000 vehicles per day. It's a volume expected to grow to 110,000 in 2040. Doing nothing isn't an option as traffic volumes continue to grow, according to officials with the North Carolina Department of Commerce. The existing service road is being cut off from 15501, meaning to access some auto dealerships, customers will need to take Millennium Drive. The uncertain timing, as well as the tight diamond interchange plan for 15501 and Garrett Road, have some business leaders worried about customer access. In a typical day, the Marc Jacobson dealership complex along Garrett Road services 250 cars a day. In a month, Luke Sube, general manager, said they sell 450 cars. The upgraded intersection will change its access in a similar way to the Interstate 540 interchange near the Angus Barn on Glenwood Avenue in Raleigh. James Grimes, senior project engineer and project manager for NCDOT, calls separating 15501 and Garrett Road a safety play. It's also pricey, with construction estimates at about $62 million and utility relocation an additional $1.2 million. And finally, Wolfspeed drops federal case against Jaguar Land Rover. Chipmaker Wolfspeed is no longer going after luxury automaker Jaguar Land Rover in federal court over a failed supply deal. Jaguar faced a deadline to respond to a lawsuit Wolfspeed filed against it in January. However, Wolfspeed recently filed to voluntarily dismiss the case without prejudice, meaning it could refile. Attorney Martin Ward of Nelson Mullins, who represents Jaguar, said the contract at the center of the case calls for arbitration. That is part of the reason for the dismissal without prejudice, Ward said. The initial suit centered on a supply deal that once symbolized Wolfspeed's ascent in the electric vehicle space. Wolfspeed, the semiconductor company headquartered in Durham, had accused the British automaker of walking away from an agreement the companies had reached in 2022. Jaguar was to use Wolfspeed's silicon carbide components to electrify its next-generation Range Rover, Discovery, Defender, and Jaguar vehicles. But according to Wolfspeed, Jaguar didn't fulfill its end of the deal, specifically dealing with deposits and shortfall payments it claims were outlined in the contract. Wolfspeed declined to comment. The dismissal filing was submitted by attorney Rebecca Lindahl of Catton, Muchin, Rosenman, LLP. Now we turn to a page written by Champ Learley. That's spelled L-Y-E-R-L-Y is his name. Around the triangle. Duke babysitting startup expanding to UNC. Students who sit looks to connect parents with vetted students. A startup founded by a recent Duke University graduate is bringing its childcare marketplace to UNC Chapel Hill after building a community of more than 1,000 users and managing more than 1,500 childcare bookings on its home campus. Duke graduate Sidell Bernstein founded Students Who Sit, which connects university families with student babysitters through a network designed around existing campus communities rather than traditional online marketplaces. Bernstein developed the idea in response to the problem she repeatedly encountered while attending Duke. I watched professors, doctors, and local families frantically text group chats and parent networks looking for childcare, Bernstein said. Meanwhile, hundreds of responsible college students wanted flexible work but had no trusted way to connect with those families. Instead of introducing strangers, Students Who Sit verifies users through university or employer credentials and matches families with student caregivers already connected through their campus communities. The company says the trust-first model helps create a safer, more reliable childcare experience while providing students with flexible work opportunities close to campus. Since launching at Duke, Students Who Sit has facilitated more than 1,500 childcare bookings, built a community of more than 1,000 users, and generated nearly six figures in gross marketplace volume on a single campus, according to Bernstein. Hourly rates vary, as the website says each babysitter sets their own fee. The company also reports more than 500 five-star reviews from users and says the traction has demonstrated the model can scale beyond Duke. The company has not raised a traditional venture capital round. Instead, Bernstein said Students Who Sit has secured nearly $40,000 in non-dilutive funding through grants, business competitions, and entrepreneurial awards, which has supported early operations and initial campus launches without requiring the company to give up equity. As the startup grows, Bernstein said the company will evaluate raising institutional venture capital. Bernstein now works on Students Who Sit full-time alongside founding team member Anne Marie Flusch, a Duke MD-MBA student who serves as president and head of growth. Raleigh's Audio Advice pushes into South Florida. Longtime Raleigh company Audio Advice is expanding into one of the country's fastest-growing luxury housing markets through the acquisition of a longtime Miami electronics retailer, a move that advances its aggressive growth strategy. Audio Advice announced recently that it has acquired Sound Components, a Miami audio, video, and home automation company founded in 1974. The move more than doubles Audio Advice's showroom footprint in Miami and expands its presence in South Florida, where CEO Scott Newman sees demand from affluent homeowners and second home buyers. We're going to very large and fast-growing luxury markets, Newman said. Miami, in particular, has become a place where a lot of California people and a lot of people from New York are moving. For the luxury home market, both for primary residences and second homes, it's a perfect fit for what we do. The move is the latest step in Audio Advice's broader expansion. The company has seen annual revenue, now in the mid-eight figures, climb consistently in recent years. Founded in 1978, Audio Advice has built a national e-commerce business, but Newman said growing demand for installation services prompted the company to expand beyond North Carolina. And finally, here are the jobs disappearing the fastest because of AI. Artificial intelligence may be reshaping the labor market, but new research suggests some jobs are more resilient than others. An analysis by Wingy, and that's W-I-I-N-G-Y, a global tutoring marketplace, examined 29 job and skill categories to check whether predictions about AI's impact on work are coming true. The study compared expected risk with real-world signals in wages, demand, and search activity. It found that many hands-on, people-focused professions are growing, even as some routine digital and content-related roles begin to decline. The analysis draws on data and projections from the Oxford University Future of Employment Research, the World Economic Forum's Future of Jobs Report 2025, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, and aggregated Google search and labor market trends from 2020 to 2026. The study comes as employers across the triangle continue to navigate rapid technological change while also facing workforce shortages in industries ranging from construction to healthcare, One of the study's sharpest contrasts is that searches for electrician apprenticeships increased 49% year over year, while searches for transcription courses fell 63%. And our last reporter page is written by Zach Ezone, Healthcare and Life Sciences. RTP Biotech enters critical phase. At Cena sees early promise in treating patients with rare eye disease, and that's spelled A-T-S-E-N-A. At Cena Therapeutics and Research Triangle Park is entering a new phase of growth as it advances its lead gene therapy into late-stage clinical testing. The company's Phase 3 trial of the therapy, ATSN-201, follows positive early-stage results in patients with X-linked retinoschisis, a rare inherited retinal disease that can cause progressive vision loss and blindness. If successful, the study could support a regulatory filing in 2028. The next phase will involve 76 participants, an increase from the 21 enrolled in the earlier phases. In May, Atsina reported data showing ATSN-201 improved retinal structure, visual acuity, and microperimetry, a measure of retinal sensitivity, while demonstrating a favorable safety profile. CEO Patrick Rischel said one of the most compelling aspects of the finding is the consistency. Where we see structural improvement, we see improvements in microperimetry. We see improvements in visual acuity, Rischel said. So all of the indicators are pointing in the same direction, he said. X-linked retinoschisis is a debilitating disease with no approved treatment options that affects about 30,000 people in North America and Europe. People with the disease will experience separations between the layers of the retina, a layer of cells at the back of the eye, which leads to vision loss. In early clinical testing, Atsina reported that its gene therapy helped close those retinal separations in some participants. Rischel cited examples including younger patients who were able to read a board from the back of a classroom and participants who reported improved ability to drive at night. "We've got real, practical, day-to-day functional improvements that have been seen in our subjects to date," Rischel said. Atsina has already enrolled more than 10% of the Phase 3 trial. The study's primary endpoint will measure changes in microperimetry after 52 weeks, putting the company on track to report top-line results in the first half of 2028. The company has more than 40 employees, most based out of its RTP headquarters, and expects to add another 7 to 10 workers by the end of the year, Rischel said. UNC Health reveals more plans for Wilmington. UNC Health's push to the coast includes a proposed $852.7 million investment in a new 150-bed hospital in Wilmington. The Chapel Hill-based health system on June 15 filed an application with the NC Department of Health and Human Services, outlining its plans for the project, which would mark a major expansion beyond the Triangle. UNC is competing against Novant Health and Atrium Health for approval to develop the hospital beds. UNC wants to build the 543,790 square foot UNC Health Wilmington Medical Center on a 62-acre site at South 17th Street and Shipyard Boulevard, located south of downtown near Novant Health New Hanover Regional Medical Center. The system is targeting a 2030 opening date. The facility would offer services including emergency care, cardiology, oncology, and obstetrics. The application is in response to the 2026 State Medical Facilities Plan, which identifies a need for an additional 225 acute care beds in the county. Atrium and Novant, the dominant health systems in the region, also filed competing applications for the beds. Atrium filed an application to develop a 42-bed hospital. Novant is seeking approval to add the 225 beds to New Hanover Regional Medical Center. And finally, Duke Health eyes $32 million Garner expansion. Duke Health is planning a $32 million investment to expand its new medical campus in Garner. The health system on June 15 filed an application with the NC Department of Health and Human Services to develop a 29,500-square-foot freestanding emergency department at its 23-acre campus on Timber Drive East. Duke plans to locate the facility on the first floor of a medical office building that is under development. The emergency department would include treatment space such as triage and fast-tracked areas and a trauma room. The project also includes medical imaging equipment as well as pharmacy and laboratory services to support emergency care. In a statement, Duke Health officials said the project would bring care closer to where patients live by expanding access to emergency care in fast-growing areas of Wake County. The project would also ease pressure on emergency departments, according to Duke's application. It said emergency department utilization at Duke Raleigh Hospital increased 14% between 2022 and 2024, while emergency visits across Wake County providers, including freestanding emergency departments, rose 8% during the same period. If approved, Duke expects to open the emergency department in 2027. And with our remaining time with the Triangle Business Journal, we'll now turn to the Executive Voice Q&A column and read as much as we can. This one focuses on Trevor Grohan, that's spelled C-R-O-G-H-A-N. In a closer look, title, CEO, Store Office Environments, age 48, education, BA, University of Montana, MBA, UC Berkeley, Haas School of Business. Family, wife Nicole, children Cade and Alana. First job, middle school classroom teacher and varsity swimming coach, California Public Schools. In October, longtime Raleigh company Store Office Environments entered into a strategic partnership with the Zaff Group, a Chicago area entity that acquires and runs family-owned businesses through long-term ownership. As part of that new ownership structure, a leadership transition has taken place involving long-serving CEO Tom Van Gooch being succeeded by Trevor Grohan, a 19-year veteran of One Workplace, a Santa Clara, California-based provider of commercial furnishings and workplace solutions. Founded in 1914, Store now has about 200 full-time employees and operates out of Raleigh, Greensboro, and Wilmington. The business is a premier steel case dealer and generates roughly $100 million in annual revenue across furniture, services, records management, warehousing, and workplace solutions. What led you to the role of CEO of Store? I had spent 19 incredible years at One Workplace and was ready for the challenge of leading an organization end to end. When Store came into the picture, it felt different almost immediately. The first element was the values. Do what is right, do your best, treat others as you would like to be treated. The second consideration was TZG's ownership model. TZG is a family office with the same long-term value-based approach. I've spent my entire career in organizations where ownership was personal, where the people at the top had real skin in the game and a genuine commitment to building something that lasted. That's not a change for me. And we'll skip to the last question. What are your goals for Stores? In the short term, my focus is straightforward. Listen and learn. I want to understand what has made Store trusted for more than a century before I started talking about what comes next. From there, the opportunity is significant. Store has the team, the relationships, the brand, and the platform to be a much larger company. We have room to grow within our existing markets, room to deepen our service capabilities, and room to bring more value to the customers we already serve. And we'll stop there on that column written by Cameron Snipes. And today's program, though, is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. And we've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.